From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with a number of stories of high strangeness, including what are these trumpet sounds that people are hearing? My oh my. Followed by, in our last hour, conversations with Linda. Here's what's happening. A British spy agency intercepted webcam images from millions of Yahoo users around the world, according to a report in The Guardian. Yahoo has denied prior knowledge of the program, describing it as a completely unacceptable privacy violation. In a statement, the agency said all the actions are in accordance with the law. The operation, which was called Optic Nerve and was aided by the NSA, is alleged to have stored images from 2008 to 2010 in 1 6-month period in 2008. Images from 1.8 million users were gathered. When are they going to stop this stuff? Federal Reserve Chairperson Janet Yellen says the central bank is on alert to make sure recent signs of weakness in the U.S. economy are due to the cold weather and storms and not signals of a more fundamental slowdown. So we shall see how they will react. The Food and Drug Administration is proposing several changes to the nutrition labels that you see on packaged foods and beverages. If approved, the new labels would place a bigger emphasis on total calories, added sugars, and certain nutrients such as vitamin D and potassium. Food safety coach Jeff Nelken with us. Jeff, I don't know, is this a good deal or not for us?
Well, I think it's a good deal considering that, you know, the last time the adjustments were made were quite a few years ago. So, you know, back in the early 80s, portion sizes were different. So you're going to see a change of also the food serving sizes, because back 20 years ago, you know, the numbers were quite different. So, for example, you might see serving size on some items that were 4 ounces or 4 servings to a package. Now you're going to see maybe 2 servings to a package, which means all of a sudden you're going to be doubling the amount of calories that you're consuming on the product. So they were looking at what people normally consumed back 20 years ago, and was, you know, quite different.
Who was the one who got this approved through the FDA?
I think it was a collaboration of a few people, you know, different groups of people looking at, you know, the label should reflect a little bit more realistic what's there, and to make it a little bit easier for the consumer to understand the label.
All right, great. Thanks, Jeff. Jeff Nelken, foodsafetycoach.com. Now, if we could only get labeling of GMO foods, we're on our way to some victory here. About 40 years ago, my aunt in Boston used to tell me, George, eat some chocolate. It's good for your heart. 40 years ago. Well, I'm looking at some research now that says dark chocolate is good for the heart. It prevents white blood cells from sticking to the walls of blood vessels. You know what? Go for it. The science team that is sifting data from the NASA Kepler telescope says it is now identified, and you've got to see this story at coasttocoastam.com, 715 new planets beyond our solar system. It's huge. In the nearly 2 decades since the first so-called exoplanet was discovered, researchers had claimed that the detection now of more than 1,000 new worlds. And I bet, maybe, just maybe out there, there's intelligent life like us. It's an amazing story. And of course, it's time for our regular UFO update. Here's Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, the skies are still busy, I hear.
Boy, they're busy everywhere, and it sounds to me, I just looked at a weather report for your neck of the woods, George, and you're going to need more than dark chocolate to protect yourself down there tonight. I hope your the antenna on your arc has a lightning arrestor, because you're about to get hit down there, I think.
Well, believe it or not, though, I'm now in St. Louis, your old stomping grounds, and it's freezing here.
Oh, that cheers me up to know I'm talking to St. Louis. Boy, I love that city. It was a great place to grow up, and I send my greetings to everybody in Missouri tonight. But really glad to hear that Linda's going to be talking about these strange sounds that everybody's picking up on.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
We're getting a lot of those reports. I shared one with her, I think, yesterday that she had requested. Unfortunately, I didn't have contact information for her. It was an anonymous report, regrettably, but I'm going to be tuned in listening to her. I'm very, very interested in this phenomenon.
You know, well, Peter, it's bizarre stuff, but the things you've been looking at and getting to the UFO Center, they're strange too.
Absolutely. I'm being bowled over by reports, George, and I'm really delighted to be on tonight. I'm glad to be doing it tonight rather than tomorrow night. I'm coming down with symptoms of the flu, I think, so I'm not sure I would have been able to make an appearance tomorrow night. But I just a few minutes ago saw that our trusty webmaster succeeded in getting our website updated just about 5 or 10 minutes ago.
Perfect.
Did a wonderful job. George, I'd like to comment just briefly. I've had the same webmaster for 19 years, Christian Stepien, down in Santa Barbara.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody wants to send a well-deserved thank you note, just one sentence, you can send it to webmaster@ufocenter.com and tell him how much you appreciate his input on this. But we just posted 160 or 180 new reports to our website. I'd like to touch just briefly on a couple or three or four of them. Last week when I was on, I was talking about the pulse of reports that I was getting Friday night. That continued well into last weekend, the 21st, 22nd, 23rd of February. And we featured one of them on the homepage of our website from Memphis, Collierville. Yet another report from a retired airline pilot who saw, he estimates, 8 or 10 of these red objects moving across the northern sky from his vantage point. Really a good report. People can go to our website, just click on that report and read what the witness had to say. Last night, a very dramatic sighting in Washington Courthouse, Ohio. Last night, Wednesday, the 26th of February, at about 8 o'clock local time, very dramatic sighting that a father and daughter had there. And tonight, I'm very pleased to be able to bring some really fresh information to the Coast audience tonight. Tonight, Attica, New York, home of the prison, I gather, three adults were driving close to a wind farm, and they realized that the windmills were being illuminated with a very strange orange light.
Uh-huh.
They decided to go and investigate. They saw an object rise out from among 58 windmills and rise up into the sky, hover for a moment, and go shooting off into the night sky. People can read that report on our homepage. And just about an hour and a half after that one, very dramatic sighting by an amateur astronomer in Hickson, Tennessee, tonight, the 27th of February at 22:55 hours, just before 11 o'clock, a very sane and sober-minded gentleman with whom I spoke tonight saw a triangle, unlighted, colored gray, just streak across the sky above his head. So people would like to read some really interesting information, I commend it to their attention at ufocenter.com.
I love it. And Peter, of course, has been supporting the National UFO Reporting Center with his own funds. I'm going to give you all an address because I'm going to ask you to just send them a few bucks. Not a lot. I normally never do this, but we need this organization to continue to survive. Here's the address. National UFO Reporting Center. Simple to remember. National UFO Reporting Center, P.O. Box 700, Davenport, Washington, just like Peter. I wonder if he owns that city. But Davenport, Washington, 99122. That's the National UFO Reporting Center, P.O. Box 700, Davenport, Washington, 99122. And look, you don't have to go into your pocket deeply. Send him a few bucks and keep this going. It's critical that we keep the National UFO Reporting Center alive. We're going to come back in a moment. We'll be talking with Thor Moeller about, of course, his work, Get Lucky. It's an amazing story, and that's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Thor Muller is the New York Times best-selling co-author of Get Lucky, How to Put Planned Serendipity to Work for You and Your Business. He's a five-time entrepreneur, most recently co-founder, former chief technology officer of Get Satisfaction, which is a groundbreaking online customer engagement platform used by so far more than 70,000 companies. As an early internet business pioneer, Thor started one of the world's first web design agencies in 1995, and he was on with me back in 2012 as we talked about Get Lucky. And I thought we'd do a little refresher with Thor on that. Thor, welcome back.
Hey, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me.
So I would have wished that you would have invented WhatsApp and and sold it to Facebook, huh? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was a stunning development, wasn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Talk about getting lucky. Wow, those founders hit the mother load on that one, didn't they?
They did. They absolutely did. It's like you're in Las Vegas and everybody's playing, and then suddenly all the bells start ringing, and you know that one slot machine hits. You know, but and you know what? Las Vegas, the casinos love it when that happens. Like, there's no better advertising for Las Vegas
than when
somebody hits the jackbox.
That's true. When we talk about luck, what does that mean?
Well, I think people mean a couple of different things. I mean, there's blind luck. You know, at first glance, it looks like, you know, when people, you know, there are lots of entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley and around the world, but only a few of them have billion-dollar outcomes, right? So you could, you know, what is that? Is that blind luck, given that so few actually hit it? Or are those entrepreneurs that much smarter than everybody else? And so one of the questions that we can ask is, you know, what special skills allow those kinds of people or some kind of people to be luckier? We call it serendipity. It's different than blind luck, where you're playing the slot machine once in a while, a slot machine hits. In the case of, you know, people who are amazing at their craft, whether it's sports or in business, they're able to put two and two together in interesting new ways. And so that's what we studied to write our book. And I've been thinking about this a lot lately with regard to WhatsApp, because I think they really embody something particular, which is they remind me of a story that a very successful businessman I know, Jim Rutt, tells. He was the CEO of Network Solutions, which ran all the domain name services for the internet way back when. And he sold it for over $1 billion. And he tells the story about how he was learning to play poker as a kid. And, you know, he was learning the odds for every hand and how to read another player's tell and so forth. And his uncle comes up to him and says, you know, you shouldn't spend your time learning all those skills. You should spend your time looking for weak games. Weak games. And Jim says, well, what's a weak game? Well, that's a game where the players are lousy, or there's something that puts the odds in your favor from the get-go, even if you don't know the odds of each hand. And then he applied that to business. And so I think we can use that lens to look at something like WhatsApp and make a little more sense of it. Because those guys, it wasn't like they were starting yet another social network, just like everybody else, focused on America, focused on first and foremost on the iPhone. They've managed to find a weak game out in the market.
That's
international,
right?
Users on old handsets, old phones that all the cool kids weren't spending time on, and they systematically built on that. So they were able to increase their odds of being lucky in a highly uncertain world by focusing on a weak game.
Yet they knew what they were doing. They anticipated, they went after. And how important is that then, Thor, with mixing it in with luck? And that is really knowing your game.
I think it's critical for most people to be able to take advantage, to see things that are meaningful. They have to kind of understand what's going on. They have to understand enough. Another story I like to tell is the story of Spence Silver. He was a chemist in the late 60s, hired by the Minnesota Mining and Mineral Company, 3M. And he was tasked with coming up with the world's strongest adhesive for their aeronautics division, super strong glue. And he was working long hours, mixing different chemicals together, looking for the strong glue. But when one night he came up with something that wasn't strong, it was actually weaker than any other glue that they had. But it could be re-adhered over time. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know what to use it for, but they kept it around. 3M was smart enough to say, that's an interesting glue. It's not what we're looking for, but it's interesting. And Spence Silver, the chemist, also thought it was interesting. And then eventually they found a product manager who was able to find a good use for it. We know it as the Post-it note. It was the adhesive that became the basis of the Post-it note.
Brilliant. I love that little product.
It's a huge product. It's in every office in the world. And it would have been very easy for Spence Silver to say, oh, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm going to ignore that. And yet he was smart enough to know that that was interesting. And he was a young guy. It wasn't like he was the world's smartest chemist. He knew enough to see something that was interesting. And I think that's the key. You don't need to be the smartest in the world in your craft. You just need to know enough to recognize interestingness.
That's true. How important is positive thinking with trying to change your luck?
Oh, there's actually empirical studies that have been done where they've shown that the power of positive thinking is absolutely critical. The mental modes that we use when we're engaging in the world color how we experience everything. And there's this one particular study where they took people and they asked, they gave them magazines and they said, count the number of ads in this magazine. They also asked these people how positively they thought about themselves in their life. They sent them to count the ads, and what they found, there was one ad in the middle which said, you can stop counting now. The people who had positive outlook on life, when they hit that ad, they recognized it and they stopped. They stopped counting because they had found the secret code in the middle of it. The people right. who had a lower opinion of themselves and a worse, more pessimistic outlooks, they kept counting. They missed the most important thing in the entire exercise because they weren't fully present in the moment. So absolutely. Positive thinking is key.
Now, if somebody wants to change their luck, you know, maybe they've got this black cloud Thor over their head and they want to change it. What do they do? What do they have to start doing?
So there are two areas that we can focus on. One is our mental states, and there are specific things we can do there. The other area is our environments. And our environment can be everything from the structure of our workspace, how we spend our time, with whom we spend our time. So starting with the mental mode, what we found is that people who seem to be luckier, who stumble on interesting things, who have breakthroughs, couple of things. One is they have a way of focusing on an area that they're really interested in. We call this the geek mind, right? They geek out on some subject or another, whether that's sports or that's science or that's their favorite show or whatever. They're able to go deep into some area, which allows them to connect with other people who are deep in that area, and they're able to see patterns that other people miss. Another thing we see, and in that change that people can make, is it's very easy to get into task mode. So you're at work, you know what you need to get done, you have your to-do list, and you just pound through that to-do list, you're getting stuff done, but you're unable to step out of the task and take a broader view and see the connections between things. And so we find that lucky people, they go back and forth between getting things done mode, task mode, and a creative mode where they're able to think more abstractly.
Yeah, they know how to shift back and forth, don't they?
Yeah. And in fact, the shifting itself seems to help them quite a bit. The task mode gives them a kind of muscle memory for the area that they're working within. And then when they go into abstract mode, they can let that fade into the background and see things from a 10,000-foot view, and make that big leap, that mental leap that they couldn't have otherwise.
Dora, we'll come back with more about luck. It's an incredible story. Get Lucky is his book. We'll take some phone calls, too. And if you want to share a lucky story with us, go ahead. And welcome back to Coast, Thor Muller with us, of course, his work, Get Lucky. How did the book do for you, Thor?
Oh, it was a great experience. It was, personally, my favorite part was writing the book. you know, it's hard work, but I got to talk to amazing people all across the spectrum, from people, you know, in Silicon Valley startups all the way to photographers in upstate New York who, you know, rarely get it out of their neighborhood. The kind of themes that emerge are they're diverse, but also they connect. The patterns are the same. So it was a lot of fun.
And you know what? You help a lot of people. We're going to take some calls here with you in a moment, see how many people have changed their luck. But it is doable. You can change your luck, can't you?
I think people do it all the time and in a lot of different ways. You don't always know that you're doing it. I think a lot of people, you know, they get stuck in a rut, they get depressed, they may have chemical addictions, and then just by correcting those things, their mind shifts and they're able to connect with people, connect with ideas in new ways, and that changes their life. They become luckier in a sense. And I mean, it's, you know, people often think about luck as monetary rewards, in a traditional measures of wealth, but a lot of people who could describe themselves as lucky are not necessarily rich or successful conventionally, but they're people who have found their passions. They found religion, they found deep interests of loved ones. And so I think when we're thinking about luck, we need to think more broadly about it.
Thor, this serendipity, why though can some people take it and use it to their advantage a little better than other people?
Yeah. So part of it is, again, it's being able to pattern match. And being able to pattern match is a function of being deeply into something, into some area, so that you can see things that other people miss. And part of it is creating environments that allow you to have what we call creative collisions. So you're able to... for instance, I mean, Steve Jobs knew this, right? And with Pixar, which he was running for a long time, when he was building the new campus out, he had his architects come in and they showed him a building that looked like every other building, right? Everybody with their own offices, each division separate from the others. He said, no. All of our good ideas come from people running into each other. We got to put all the facilities, all the cafeterias and amenities all in the center so that people, whatever project they're working on, whatever their role is, they're going to bump into one another and have to get into conversations and share ideas that will end up affecting them and taking them to new creative heights. And he helped design the new Apple campus, which is underway in a similar way. So, you know, I think when you look at people who are enormously successful, they try to build that into the structure of their environments as well.
Let's take some calls. Joyce, first-time caller in Springville, Utah. Hey, Joyce, good morning.
Hello.
Welcome. Hi.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, briefly, I was diagnosed with HIV in 1987. Serendipity definitely comes into play here. For years, I never got sick, and doctors thought the tests were wrong, that I was making it up, etc. One day, 8 years later, I was watching TV, and I saw a show about a pastor called Surviving AIDS. I contacted Harvard Medical. I became part of their study. I had to knock down on their door to become part of their study. And 9 years after I was diagnosed with HIV, I found out that I was a 1%, part of a 1% population, that has a molecule called HLA-B27 that actually prevents the disease from replicating and therefore going on and progressing to AIDS. And if I had never seen that show, I would never have been told that information. When I go to doctors, they act as if I'm crazy. I don't know what I'm talking about, even to this day in 2014. Like as I said, if I didn't see that show, I would have never found that out. I've tried to speak out about this molecule and get more verbal about it, but people don't seem to want to hear about it, or they think that I'm crazy, but it exists, it's real.
Well,
and here
I am
in 2014.
And here's the question, too, for Joyce, Thor. Was she lucky because she had the molecule, or lucky because she watched the show and knew what to do?
Well, both. I mean, some things we don't control, right? We don't control where and when we're born, with what kinds of genes, and so that's the kind of luck that we either is on our side or is a challenge for us. Great story, by the way. And
it is.
The other side, though, her when she was able to, when she saw that TV show, she had the ability to recognize that as an opportunity, and so that was the beginning of the serendipity. And that is what happens all the time. And we can all relate to this, I think. When we're researching cars and we're thinking about that one particular make and model, and then we start seeing it everywhere. Our brain is primed to find patterns. And so this is where having an interest, or in this case, an illness that allows you to make those connections, can be such a positive creative force.
In the future, do you think people are going to be using this serendipity to do what they need to do in their own lives? Is it going to grow?
I think in certain environments, it absolutely is a part. It will become a larger part of how we think about success. I mean, really, when you think about networking, we can act like we can target certain people in a networking environment, at a networking party, an industry party, or a conference. But most of the relationships that change people's lives in those kinds of networking events are the ones that they could never have predicted. So we already doing some of this stuff, but we don't have the language for it. And so that people aren't able to develop the skills as effectively in general. So I think so. I think, for instance, Tony Hsieh, the founder of Zappos, great, online shoe company, sold to Amazon for $1 billion. He is dumping $500 million of his own money into downtown Las Vegas to transform it into a new tech hub. And he's using serendipity as the organizing principle of it. Right? Instead of having a planned community with a 20-year development plan and so forth, he is allowing the things to emerge gradually based on the interactions of people who are there. So this is actually being used in large-scale projects now.
That's exciting. It really is. Back to Vegas for a moment. How important is your attitude when you're out there? If you want to win, for example, is it all luck? Is it all attitude? What is it?
Well, you mean in terms of casino games?
Yeah.
Well, in general, I would say that a casino game, the casinos are tightly managed to produce wins, reliable wins for the casinos, right? As long as they can fill the hotel rooms and people spend time at the tables, they will win more than they lose.
Vegas was not built by the winners, that's for sure.
That's exactly right. There are certain games where a good betting strategy, by the way, I'm no expert in when it comes to gambling strategies. It's not really what our book's about. But I think that those who are professional gamblers will tell you, especially poker players. I mean, poker is a game where people are playing, players play against other players, and it's a psychological game as much as anything, especially as, in these tournaments where people work their way through and, the players get better and better. That state of mind is absolutely central to staying cool so that you can recognize the little details that tell you what you should be doing that make you lucky at the table.
When people are in a better mood, better things seem to come their way, Thor. How come?
Well, I think it goes back to this phenomenon I mentioned earlier about being able to step out, step above the details that are right in front of you. When you are in a good mood, you're able to rise above the sort of tasks and the introspection that can pull you towards depression or towards self-obsession, and get you able to make connections with things that you may be coming into contact with. So that's at a high level what I believe is going on there.
Let's go to Cheryl in Huntington Beach, California. Cheryl, hi. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Mr. Norrie. Thank you again for taking my call. And speaking of lucky, this is my third time calling and my third time, thank you, God, getting through.
You're 100%. That is lucky.
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. My story is tonight is that I took my mother to Vegas shortly before she passed. My mother was very astute with figures. She was a bookkeeper by her trade. And we went to Vegas. We went to a casino. My mom was very astute with numbers. Like I said, she won at blackjack all the time. And one night, they brought in actually five different dealers on her table. So she kept winning. And my father kept saying, come on, come on, let's go, Joss, let's go. You know, and she didn't get the numbers. You know, she didn't figure that out, that she was winning on the house. And so she said to me, she said, go sit at this machine, because I love to play, you know, the one-armed bandit. And so I took over $100 and $1 coins, and I sat at that machine that she told me to. I won $1,600. I'm not kidding you, Mr. Norrie. It was not too far from the front door. I won't tell you the casino, but I had the dollars lined up. You know how the coins are. I had them on my lap. I was not going to leave that money. No, I was not. And finally, after 2.5 hours, I had to go to the ladies' room. So I asked my uncle, I said, mind my money. I have to go to the ladies' room. He watched that. You know, of course he did. And I went to the ladies. I wasn't gone 10 minutes. I came back. And there was a casino person, you know, an attendant, down there underneath the machine going click, click, click under the machine. I put $30 in, and I didn't get any money back. That's when I took all my coins and I cashed myself out. I paid for the hotel room for, you know, the entire night, meals and whatever. But I want to tell you, I'm very fortunate. I was born on a Friday the 13th in a hurricane. I was born in Boston, Massachusetts. So I think I'm very fortunate, but I'm very positive as well. And I think people that are around me are as more lucky as I am.
Well, that's good, and it worked for you. What is it, though, Thor? What is it that creates this luck, the serendipity? Is there something out there in the universe we tap into? Are we doing it with our own brain? What's happening?
Well, if I knew that, I think I make a distinction between serendipity, which is this combination of the individual who can recognize opportunities when they come across, and the chance events. We call it chance plus creativity equals serendipity. And then there's this kind of more mystical sense of luck. Why do some people like perhaps the caller have these sequences of good fortune that are just stunning and make you scratch your head? It could be a vortex, you know, who they were born in a vortex. It could be the alignment of the stars. That's above my pay grade exactly, but I think it's a great question to answer. I am interested a little in some of the information science behind this. So there's a writer and mathematician named Nassim Taleb, who has written several great books. One is called Fooled by Randomness. And he's talking about traders, stock traders, who he mentions are often very self-congratulatory when they have streaks of, you know, winning streaks at the in the stock market. And then, of course, some of them end up losing their shirt, losing their house and their fancy cars. And he introduces the use of something called a Monte Carlo simulation, where you can run simulations of something like the stock market with, you know, software agents. And what you see there, what he shows is that most people will lose a bit, a few people lose a ton, and a few of these software agent people end up with extraordinary runs of luck. It's just probabilistically that's going to happen. So, I'm not saying there isn't a mystical source for individuals having great sums of luck or great sequences of luck, but there's also some math that makes it inevitable that some are going to have these kind of winning streaks.
Let's go to Rattles in Pleasant Valley, Alaska. Hello there. Welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi there. I'd like to tell that fellow something there.
Well, go ahead.
There's this term, do you feel lucky?
Yeah.
Well, there's a feeling to it. Yep. But where does that come from?
Where does that lucky feeling come from anyways? Or is it deep down inside?
Well, I think it's deep down inside. I think that we have intuition, you know, a deep intuition that is the result of subconscious processes that are running. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, psychological studies that show that the subconscious mind works much faster than the conscious mind, than the reasoning mind. And so much faster that some have theorized that really the conscious mind only has a veto power on the subconscious mind. And most of what we do is being driven by this sort of intuitive self. And so it's going to see things, it's going to make observations much faster. And so we have that feeling, I think that's part of it. It could also be, you know, wrinkles in the time-space continuum, for all I know. Some of it is definitely that subconscious working.
And Rattles, I suspect there was a rut. What was that, Rattles? Go ahead.
Why wouldn't you sooner feel blessed than lucky?
Blessed than lucky. Hmm. Well, that's an interesting take on that. What if somebody is very spiritual and you tap into stuff like that? Do you think there's some kind of God-given formula here, or even something evil from the devil?
Well, I know that lots of people would have that interpretation that, that good fortune, that all things are granted by God, by the deity, and that we should, we should have a great deal of humility in the light of that. And even when bad things happen, I mean, think about Job in the Bible. Job was a very godly man, and very bad things happened to him for a pretty long stretch. And it turns out he was being tested. And it was his faith that carried him through. And at the very end of that story, it appears that he feels lucky that he was able to maintain his faith despite all that terrible luck. So there's some paradox there in terms of the devil. The devil made me do it.
Thor's website, by the way, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The book, Get Lucky, still available, I assume, Thor, isn't it?
Yep, still available on Amazon. And people seem to love it. We have also 5-star ratings. So,
are you still in the into the internet, into the web? You're still doing things like that?
Yeah, I'm actively working on new internet products. I'm very interested in the rise of this new currency system, the cryptocurrency.
Bitcoin.
Yes.
Bitcoin. Be careful there, though. Be careful. Bitcoin.
Well, I'd be careful, very careful about speculating, but it's a very interesting development in terms of how it works.
What's happening, absolutely. Thor, thanks so much. Up next, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joining us with some incredible stories. I'm George Norrie, and you're listening to Coast to Coast AM.